Eureka! You found us! Welcome to the Check Out California Radio Show, your key to California hospitality. Hosted by Rad Gantos, principal of Rad Gantos & Associates, a hospitality and commercial real estate design firm, and Craig Sullivan, executive vice president of ParkWest GC, a hospitality and commercial real estate general contractor. Check Out California is focused on our state's hospitality, travel, and tourism markets, and on the large part they play in California's vibrant and innovative economic diversity and unique quality of life. Now, here are your hosts, Rad Gantos and Craig Sullivan.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Check Out California. I'm Craig Sullivan. That's Rad Gantos, my co-host. And we are very lucky today. We've got our returning champion, Bob the Hotel Guru Roush from RAR Hospitality in San Diego. Welcome to the show, Bob.
All right.
It's happy, good to see
it's
you.
It's happy time, man. I'm here back at Check Out California.
It is. It is. I really appreciate you making the time to drive up to Orange County today to join us. And for those of you who don't know Bob, you need to get to know him. See his website, hotelguru.com. Bob is a wealth of information on the local markets here in California, and he also teaches at ASU. He's been there for a few years. He's also got some assets that he manages in the great state of Arizona, and ParkWest was lucky enough to renovate one of them this year, and thank you very much for that. I know that made Ed and Chris very happy as well, so thank you. Bob, we're both back from the lodging conference for a couple of weeks. What were your takeaways from there?
You know, it's interesting. The best takeaway was probably Bernie Baumel, who's the economist.
Uh-huh.
Every year he comes and speaks to the lodging conference. And one of the things he told us about is what's really changing in the economy since his last remarks a year ago.
Yeah.
And there's a lot going on. You know, one of them is the tax cuts and the fact that they've had a tremendous positive impact in 2018, but that could perhaps disappear in 2019, certainly by 2020. So that is one thing. And then, of course, the potential of a trade war and some of the things that are happening in the macroeconomic environment relative to oil. For instance, a lot of geopolitical concerns that oil may not be able to hold on to pricing for reasons that have nothing to do with supply and demand, interestingly, more to do with geopolitics. So I would say he was putting a real yellow light on for caution in the economy and saying that the the conference board in general is looking at maybe 3% GDP growth this
right.
year, 2.2 next year, 1.4 in 2020. And when you get down to 1.4, it's
all bets are off.
Who knows? So the real question, I think, is when will we have a correction, a soft landing, or a true recession? But the one question that is certainly answered in my mind is that it will be in the next 2 to 3 years, not 5 or 10 years from now.
This economy's gone on, you know, slowly but surely for a number of years,
which is a big thing to say, given that last year we were all just all high marks and, you know,
sunshine and rainbows.
Sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. Rad, you're exactly right. A year ago, everything was, you know what, we don't see anything on the horizon.
Nothing.
And now there are things on the horizon. And, of course, there's always the black swan event, whether it's terrorism or something else,
right,
that derails the economy. But 2018, there is no doubt, is a very solid year. And even Bernie Baumel submits that the first half of 2019 is not in danger at the moment from his perspective. So, you know, in my mind, 2019 is probably going to be fine.
Fine, yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think oil is certainly a big question mark that everybody needs to keep an eye on. I mean, your hometown, it's a drive-to market. It's a fly market. It's, you know, so you're adversely impacted if all of a sudden a barrel of oil is $100 again. Or
well,
more.
You know, it's interesting that you say that. The real losers are the true call it fly markets, where it's very difficult to drive
right.
from close by. Orlando is a great example. Phoenix might be another one that gets impacted in a more significant way if oil prices go crazy.
Do you think Southwest does it again and pulls the wool over everybody's eyes and buys that oil at a big discount while everybody else paying through the nose? So
anybody's watching, they're stockpiling now.
Let's get into the tax cuts a little bit more. You and I were having a good discussion at lunch today. So, okay, we've seen the benefits for this year. I think you and I are both anticipating where there's going to be some dissipation on that over the next couple of years.
Right.
So I guess the question's really going to be, do we juice up the economy again? And, I mean, we've got interest rates starting to go up. We've got prices stabilizing or dropping for a number of reasons, interest being one of them, cap rates. You've got employment issues, not just the money, but finding talent out there to make moves, you know, insurance, a number of different items. So what are you thinking about our economic condition right now in the hospitality sector?
Well, I think, first of all, right now we're rock solid.
Yeah.
Interest rates are still reasonable.
Right.
But they're rising.
Yeah.
The tax cuts have taken a really good chunk of money and put it juicing the economy for 2018.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of when that benefit will start disappearing. And also, if everything all hits at the same time. For example, if we continue to build more hotel rooms, interest rates continue to rise, the tax cut benefit dissipates, we get into a trade war with China, which I don't think is going to happen.
Right.
But it could.
Could. Yeah.
And the Institute of Supply Management, which takes a look at all the purchasing managers in the U.S., has shown that September took a dip.
Right.
Now, August was like almost like an all-time high. It's been rising for 100 straight months. So the real question is, how long will this cycle be able to continue?
Yeah.
And that's really, in my mind, the question. Could it be a record cycle, which I think is 111 months is the record? Well, that means a year from now, we will have broken a record for the most consecutive months of the economy growing. So how does that impact the hotel industry? Well, if we continue to build more hotel rooms and the economy starts falling apart, then whether we're in a recession or not, the hotel industry will be in a soft period.
Well, and we're typically always the canary in the coal mine. We're the first one that feels any adverse effects.
Yes, because 55% of the business in Southern California, anyway, is leisure. And the leisure business really is impacted.
Yeah.
I mean, it's discretionary travel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it does raise an interesting point, right? Because there's no avoiding the cycles, okay? That's just, it ebbs and flows, and it always will, right? But it's interesting sometimes when you look at the motivation behind some of these things that are put in to stimulate the economy and whether they're really built in with a long, I mean, and you can argue that different countries and different places have a different philosophy and approach, right? Are they really put in from a sustainable model? Or they put in from a cyclical model that has other ulterior reasons basically involved, right? But this is kind of the interesting thing. So, and the human nature side of this, which is now interest rates are going up, right? Which anybody who has, you know, been half watching anything is going, I expected it like 3 months ago, you know, not now.
Yeah.
Everybody else is basically screaming, oh my God, the sky is falling, Chicken Little, right? It's kind of interesting because now we have been so accustomed to an unrealistic situation that now we have made it the norm.
Yeah.
Well, that might be true. What's really interesting, Rad, is that many of the millennials out there have never experienced a recession where they are the primary breadwinner in a family.
They're the primary one hit.
So they've been in the business 5, 6, 7 years out of college, never have had to deal with a recession.
Right.
So they just don't know what to expect. In their minds, it's all good right now. You know, I've been through 5 recessions, so I know better.
You get seasoned after a few.
You get a lot more than seasoned, but
I'm trying to keep it clean.
On the employment front, for hospitality. Okay, we also at lunch we were talking about robotics and AIs, and
Billable talent.
It last year we had 300,000 positions that weren't filled nationally in the hotel sector, and it's now at 800,000. So obviously we're not doing a good job within our industry to attract talent, and that needs to change. But what are you seeing out there? You know, what are your thoughts about, you know, employment and AI and tech, and what's on the horizon there?
What's on the horizon is not what the unions want to hear. I mean, clearly robotics and AI are here to stay.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not they will start really replacing jobs is not really a matter of whether or not they do. It's when. But a good example, Craig, at lunch, you and I were served food. We won't mention where.
Right.
Lunch was good.
They're not a sponsor, yeah.
Lunch was good.
It was good.
But the question is whether or not the server was necessary.
Right.
Because in California, we pay servers minimum wage.
Right.
Well, as tech-savvy old farts, we could certainly take a tablet and order our food.
Right.
So the real question, I think, will be when will it be smart, economically, to use some kind of automation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the answer is pretty much now.
Now, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a robot at one of our hotels, but it was not – the robot was not put into service to replace an employee. He was put – and I say he – technically, he's gender neutral, but the staff calls him a guy. So that's supposed to be a joke, by the way.
I'm laughing on
that. No, I'm just I'm saying it's supposed to be. You
supposed
know?
To be.
Yeah. So here's the
San Diego humor.
There you go.
Oh, jeez. I don't know if that's a low blow or not.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
No. But technically, the robot is there to protect the night auditor, the one person who works in a hotel overnight,
right.
from leaving that front desk. Because I can send that robot up to deliver food, beverage, supplies,
towels,
whatever they need, whatever the guest wants. So right at the moment, we're making employees more productive by keeping them doing what they're paid to do, focused to do, and send up the robot instead of the employee, not an employee who had a dedicated job. Mm-hmm. Their dedicated job is to either clean rooms, clean the hotel, or check guests in, whatever it is. It's not to deliver things. Small hotels mm-hmm. need to have somebody, and in this case it's a robot, to do things that are just guest requests. And so and of course for safety and security now we have it replacing the night auditor going up, but the night auditor still has a job.
Right.
So at the end of the day, there is going to be AI and robotics that will actually replace employees, mm-hmm. and it's going to be soon.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your AI, your robot rather, doing security? Is it going outside the building and checking the perimeters as well?
Okay, so our robot is a service robot.
Okay.
So he delivers, but he also does work on the Wi-Fi system, and he has a camera. So he's able to walk the floors and do two things. Number one, tell you whether or not the Wi-Fi is working, and he doesn't necessarily tell you
the signal.
You know, the signal is there.
There.
The fourth floor Wi-Fi is either out or suspect. He also is taking a picture of what's occurring.
Right.
And that's in real time.
Yeah.
So he is doing some security, but that's within the confines of the Wi-Fi.
Okay.
So as far as outdoor security, there are robots.
Right.
There are companies that are building robots that are solely for security.
Security
now.
In the outside parking
and
lots.
There also are, there's a company building robots who vacuum hallways, convention centers, and hotel rooms.
Right.
So there definitely is a trend.
It's all
and there
on
are
the
companies
horizon.
That are doing it right now.
Now, yeah.
So here's an interesting aspect to that, too, for those who basically are saying, you know, you're eliminating jobs, you're eroding jobs, you know, all this stuff. I just came from a advisory panel discussion at Brandenman University here in Irvine, and there was a discussion about the rolling out of a hospitality leadership training program. And it was relevant to food and beverage and hospitality. And the question was, there was a lack internally, unless you're like a Four Seasons, and Four Seasons came up as an example, which we use all the time as a great seller example, which I laughed because, of course you would mention Four Seasons. But they used the fact that there's a lack of growing and leadership talent from internally. And so these people that maybe are currently vacuuming the corridors, but they have a loyalty and sense of belonging to that property, there could be a potential to actually elevate them to a different level of service within the organization and take that job of vacuuming the corridors or delivering the towels and automating it. So it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. It doesn't have to be a loss situation.
Right.
It could actually be an opportunity to better provide, because at the end of the day, we are a hospitality touch-based industry.
Yeah.
So that could very well be an opportunity for those people to elevate to a different level of involvement in the industry.
Absolutely.
As long as you have, sort of leadership and understanding that, you have a loyal employee, you can grow from the inside, you can develop leadership skills, they feel like they're growing their skills. So it's not necessarily that automation immediately is looked at as this anathema that,
Well, that's a good point, Rad, but it is looked at that way.
I know it is.
Perspective, it's not that way, because if you look at automation over the last 100 years in the United States anyway, we have not replaced jobs. We have changed jobs.
The way we do it. Right?
So whether it's a factory worker who's on an automation line and now the automation is done by robotics.
Mm-hmm. Automotive.
Factory worker can be and is typically trained to do things that are either in the software field or some other field that is not necessarily related to what they were doing. So they may have to be completely retrained, but there's been more jobs created from robotics alone than there are taken away.
Well, I agree with you on that. And part of the problem is we don't, as a nation or a society or as an industry, bring that fact up enough. Flint, Michigan's always brought up, okay, and what happened there when they took the Suburbans out, okay, Roger and me, okay, that's the only picture anybody ever has is of that Michael Moore movie. So,
or why would you send people back into the coal mines? I mean, it's like it makes no sense to basically not champion and herald advancements that raise everybody's skill level, involvement. People are growing into some other aspects of their personalities, their lives, their abilities, instead of basically just telling people, this is it, and we're going to bring that job back instead of give it to a robot. No, elevate that person. I mean, this is really kind of, you're absolutely right. We don't champion that. We don't talk about the positives of that enough.
And we need to. Bob does a great job at training. He's very hands-on. His team's always, there. And, if you can take some, and again, our industry is the one where you could be a doorman or a bellman today, and you could be running a management company, 10, 15, 20 years from now. And we don't bring that up enough. We don't bring it up as a society with retraining. And I think that's also got to be part of what's in our DNA as being hospitality. We've got to be able to train. We've got to bring more people in. I mean, you're doing it on a regular basis by teaching at ASU. You're part of the solving of the problem of getting, people into our industry. And I thank you for that, my friend.
Well, we all have a responsibility to train because we know what we've gone through, and people can learn from somebody who's experienced. And so it's important not only academically, because there are jobs that that don't require a four-year degree, but training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whether it's the simple four-step method of showing them and teaching them right there on the spot, or whether or not it's a deeper level of learning.
Don't you think, Bob? You can almost argue that it's a question of mindset. Like, if your mindset is where you value that, then it's going to permeate throughout the whole organization. It's going to permeate throughout anybody that you are interacting with, your relationships. That if your mindset is one of that, of elevating a person's skill level, of sharing, of training, not necessarily because there's a certificate at the end of it, but there's a benefit of the sharing, then that mindset will permeate everything you touch. If your mindset is very insular, very sort of task-oriented and almost like begrudgingly so, that is also going to permeate everything that you touch. And so with hospitality, we say this all the time in our DNA, you have to almost be the first example in order for this to really flourish. Otherwise, it's just a matter of time before the thing just collapses, or you end up basically being so annoyed with what you're doing is you just find another thing to do.
And it comes from the
leadership down.
The servant leader.
Yeah,
right.
Is a book that basically describes that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very good reference. Yeah.
Very good. You know, we're going to take a short commercial break here because, Paul, our next subject's going to run a lot longer. So we'll be back in a few minutes with Bob Rausch and my co-host, Mr. Rad Gantos. We're on Checkout California. Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
Do you want a free analysis of your inbound marketing? Do you want it in 30 seconds or less? Then check out Marketing Grader, the free marketing tool from HubSpot. It's simple. Just go to marketinggrader.com, enter the URL that you want to analyze, and Marketing Grader will instantly give you a detailed report grading your lead generation, mobile marketing, social media, competitive benchmarking, and more. It's simple, it's powerful, and it's free. MarketingGrader.com.
We're back. This is Checkout California. I'm Craig Sullivan, and this is Rad Gantos. And we've got Bob, the hotel guru, Rausch from RAR Hospitality. Bob, thank you again for being here. This is Checkout California, so let's check out the markets. Let's start in San Francisco and work our way down to your hometown in San Diego. What's going on in San Francisco?
Well, San Francisco had a very tough year last year. The Moscone Center was closed for renovation. And I tell you what, they are reaping the benefits today.
Yeah.
They're just reopened, and what is on the books is outstanding, and they are really having a fantastic fourth quarter and have the books loaded for the next several years.
What's their typical RevPAR and their occupancy up there right now?
Well, first of all, Northern California and Southern California are different in more ways than one. And one way is the RevPAR. So the average rates are all over 200 in Northern California, and the occupancy levels are 80% plus. So they're in the, I'd say, in the low to mid 200s, where LA is in the high 100s and Anaheim and San Diego lag behind in the low 100s.
Okay.
But anyway, here's the thing. San Francisco now has an open convention center, and they have not added a ton of new supply. So doing well. LA, on the other hand, is building hotel rooms in abundance.
Right.
Thousands and thousands, 4,000 plus this year. So they are going to eventually run into either too much supply or their convention center expansion is going to have to create significantly more room nights for downtown to work out. Now, downtown, if you look 20 years ago, then 10 years ago, and then today, I mean, I was afraid to walk downtown 20 years ago.
Yeah, I still am.
Come on.
As long as I'm in L.A. Live, I'm good.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
No, it's changed quite
a bit. You know, five blocks in direction, not so much.
You
got to
remember, Rad, Craig's not like you and I. You know, I can't believe
the Baron of Balboa.
You're still afraid of L.A. Okay. Well, you know, being from New York,
I escaped
I'm not afraid
20 years
of LA.
Ago.
You know, Bob,
so
we'll just have to put some Kevlar on him and take him down there, you and I. Yeah.
So L.A. has really changed. I mean, it's a really strong market now. And Anaheim, of course, with what Disney has huge plans. I'm not privy to all of them, but those plans will happen in 2019.
Yeah.
So Orange County is going to do very well next year. L.A. is going to do very well, but they have to be careful with new supply. I got into an argument with one of the feasibility guys. I won't mention his name, great guy, but he's thinking they need a lot more rooms. And to me, they need more demand before they need rooms. But listen, everybody's entitled to their opinion. San Diego lost an opportunity to have the convention center be on the ballot next month. So we in San Diego need to figure out a way to get that convention center built.
Right.
Otherwise, all the rooms that are in the pipeline will be basically supplying the same convention center
demand
since 2000.
Right. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but you've got a lot of new people at your convention center. Didn't they come down from the LA Convention Center?
You know, I try not to worry too much about where the people who are running the convention center are from. And I'll tell you why. It's the same as people operate. They're effective.
Right.
They do a good job, but they're not the ones who bring the business in.
Right.
They're the ones who serve.
Yeah.
So it's like our hotel team members, mm-hmm. they serve.
Right.
They're great, but they're not the ones who find the business to bring in. So it's the salespeople, and the salespeople are still the San Diego Tourism Authority.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they do an outstanding job, but they are definitely going to run into some trouble in 3 to 5 years. And I say they, but I'm on the board of that organization, and we definitely are going to need an expanded convention center.
Yeah. I mean, you guys really do need one. I mean, San Diego is probably, you know, one of the two or three favorite spots that I have for going to a conference. When Alice was in San Diego, okay, that was the way to kick off January. I mean, don't get me wrong, LA Live's nice, but it's not San Diego. We're not on the water, okay? You know, it's not the gas lamp as much as it wants to be. It's, you know, downtown LA Live is not Santa Monica or Old Town Pasadena. It still has a lot of growth that it needs to get to before it becomes something like the gas lamp. And the gas lamp's very special and unique. So
location, location, location. I don't think the LA Live will ever have the offering that the gas lamp does just by virtue of location.
Well, yeah. I think you make the point that we in San Diego make when the naysayers, and there are these guys, I won't mention names
naysayers?
Again.
Naysayers? There are no naysayers.
No, there are a lot of naysayers who say you shouldn't build convention centers. And they're right. Yeah. If you look at the U.S. in general, building in the middle of the U.S. where you don't have the advantage of climate or an environment like the gas lamp quarter in San Diego, then you're building a convention center like the Field of Dreams. Build it and they will come. Yeah. And they won't necessarily come.
Yeah, they're not going
to. No, especially these days, because everything is built around experiential.
And let me tell you, you're right on with the word experiential, and they like outdoor experiential.
Oh, yeah. And it's getting more and more that way with the millennials. You've got a millennial partner.
Absolutely.
And that's part of their DNA.
That's right. That's
what happened with Long Beach and reactivating the arena. They reactivated the arena. It's a smaller venue offering. It appealed to a certain percentage of the market that wasn't really being served at a high caliber offering venue. And they basically put in a lot of bells and whistles that came along with that. And they reactivated an arena, including tapping into all its history and heritage with all the bands and, you know, from the Doors to you name it, that played through there, Zeppelin, everything. And so it's interesting because, again, location, unique offering. The LA Live has its own draw, but it will never be San Diego gas.
But you know, it's interesting what Craig just said about millennials. You know, I have both two daughters and a business partner who are millennials, and they think differently than we do. And of course, all the negative comments you get from baby boomers who claim millennial, they say millennials are lazy. Well, my daughters and my business partner definitely not lazy, and they have a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
The millennial mindset is different.
And, well, the motivation is very different.
And the thing is, you have to have that because today's consumer is more and more becoming the millennial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it was presented to me one time that the motivation that was for a baby boomer or even a Gen Xer, to be honest, is not the same because millennials, it's experiential and memory. Like making memories and experiential. And they will trade that for higher salaries and things like that. Experiential is huge.
I think they said, give me Instagram or give me death. I think, didn't they say that?
It was something.
Were they wearing some sort of wig at the time?
There we go.
Flying a kite.
Now, you created a new term.
Oh, this is good.
I did, but you know, you warned me that I probably should patent or copyright it.
Absolutely.
I don't care about that because they heard it first on Checkout California, baby.
All right. Hey, we've got another exclusive. Here we go. Go ahead, Bob. Tell us
your answer. You want me to tell you about that?
Yeah. Well, but if you use it, you need to quote Bob, so make sure that...
Now, you know what's funny about that? Not only do I not care about that, what really is important is that people understand this concept, especially if they own a hotel. So the data that we gather is critical. And we're finding more and more that everybody in the hotel industry is talking about direct bookings because they feel the online travel agencies, Expedia, Booking.com, and those other, quote, OTAs, are overcharging because they're charging these huge commissions, independent hotels paying over 20%.
Wow.
$100 room is really, you know, $80 net to the hotel at best. And then there are costs that are associated with getting those direct bookings, like creating loyalty takes, you know, pay-per-click and then serve the guest well, maybe give them a gift.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you're getting all these direct bookings, but at the end of the day, it's costing something. And if you're not getting direct bookings, if you're using the OTAs, it's costing you a huge commission. Either way, you lose. So we talk about RevPAR, have talked about RevPAR ever since my friend Randy Smith developed STR, Smith Travel Research,
which
is what the name was originally. Ever since he developed that, and RevPAR was the term he used. Occupancy, average rate, and RevPAR, the combination of the two. It really is what I call NIPAR now. And I took it after, because I started studying Chinese, so I was saying Ni Hao all the time. Well, it's NIPAR. NIPAR is net income per available room, and that is all that matters. So all the people are chasing RevPAR, and they realize they're spending more to get the number up.
So and you're ending up in a bad spot.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
The brands love RevPAR.
Right.
Why? Because they charge based on revenue. And so it's all about RevPAR to them. They don't care about NIPAR, and I don't mean to knock the brands, but they really are not worried about NIPAR until it affects the owners so much that they ditch the brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So NIPAR is what we should be looking at. Net income per available room after all expenses. And that includes pay-per-click campaigns.
Right.
I mean, everything that it takes to get the guests there is part of the cost.
Yeah.
And the wages are increasing now.
Wages, benefits,
that's very good.
Taxes,
that's very good.
Interest rates. It's
much
all
more meaningful measure.
Yeah.
On the ownership side, at least.
Much more.
It certainly is for me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
as it should be. As being the custodian, I mean, your management company is, you know, you've got to look at these numbers. You set the budgets for your teams at each asset and go, hey, you know.
And that's why when we charge for management, we look at a percent of the gross and a percent of the net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's meaningful to the owner.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The percent of the gross should really cover your overhead.
Yeah.
The percent of the net should be how you add value.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No, that's and it's tremendous. I think that's great. You know, we've had our share of consolidations, M&A. We're going to see more of it. We just had a mid-size management company here merge with another one out of Honolulu. So What are you seeing on the horizon for the industry, you know, with all this consolidation or
mergers?
You know, I really like the M&A term a little bit better. I think it softens the blow.
Well, okay.
And it also depends on what, you're the buyer or the buyee. Okay?
Well, the thing is, if you use the word merger, then in theory, both firms decided to merge. One didn't buy the other.
Right.
If you use acquisition, it's acquisition. Consolidation actually takes into account both. But it doesn't matter what you use.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's what the impact is.
Yep.
And if it is accretive to the earnings of the buying company, they're going to buy it.
Right.
And if it helps the company that's being acquired to survive and or thrive, then they're going to do it. And the truth is, with today's cybercrime going on and the plethora of laws that are changing, small companies have a tough time keeping up with all the law changes alone.
Right.
You can't have in-house counsel. If you're a small management company, you can't afford in-house counsel. It's hard to afford really talented human resource people who can even keep up with the wage portion of the laws. And then you've got all these drive-by lawsuits. You really have to be bigger to survive the tough times and to thrive in the good times. And so I think, and of course, if you can make something as one who's acquiring, if you can make it accretive to your earnings, if you're a public company or just plain more profitable, you're going to do it because, unfortunately, bigger is better.
Better, yeah. Yeah.
As long as the people coming along by the acquired entity are still being serviced in a manner that kept them loyal to that acquired entity. Because what I've seen happen as well is when you do get bigger, the philosophy and the culture between the two entities that are being merged, acquired, consolidated, whatever you want to use as a term, sometimes are not an exact fit.
And when you go to restructure,
you go to restructure, and what you end up happening is depending on who's in a position of power versus equality, whatever, if it doesn't flush out to where the expectations of the portfolio of business that's coming into with the acquired entity does not match with the culture of the overwinning entity, those clients go away.
No, it's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, culture is definitely part of it. However, I don't believe they'll talk about it, but I think when these deals are done, especially the Wall Street deals, It's the last thing they think about.
Oh, no. The reason why I bring it up, Bob, is because it's interesting that sometimes the motivation for the acquisition may be as simple as we've had our entity, we've ran it for 20 years, I'm cashing out.
Right.
And it's not necessarily a greater good.
You're right.
Situation. And there is some of that. Yeah.
And there is some of that.
Well, and the reason there's some of that is because that is not top of mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that we're getting old, okay?
No. Who's getting old?
Me.
You're not getting old. Your beard's getting longer.
Actually, I just trimmed it back. It's getting grayer.
He trimmed it at 8 o'clock this morning.
I was actually
teasing. Looking like Jerry Garcia the other
day. I figured most of the people don't see you on radio, so they're thinking, oh, the guy's got a huge beard now.
Yeah, he grows it every week.
Yeah, every week. Soft brands.
Okay.
What do you think about that? All the brands that have been added the past couple of years.
You know, it's fine. When times are good,
right,
the brands can keep on adding.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter because it doesn't take away from the existing properties because everybody's growing. But when the music stops, and the music's going to stop. Well, let's say it's 2021 that the music stops.
Yeah.
And we have all these new brands and no new demand. And you're an owner. And all of a sudden, one of the big chains has added all these brands and you are getting a very small piece of the pie that you used to get. I mean, let's say you're getting 2/3 of the pie you used to get, or even 3/4. That's not enough.
Right.
And you start losing market share and you go to complain. And what will the franchise company say? I don't know. I mean, we'll see when we get there. But
right.
What are the chances they're going to say, gee, we'll give you a discount?
Well, and is that soft brand, these layers of soft brand, is it genuinely differentiated enough that it will stand on its own feet as far as offering and value added? Or is it just a minor? You know, it's like ordering, how do you like your soup? With salt, without salt, right? It's basically the same friggin' soup. It just has one added seasoning or not.
Right.
When you're sitting there and I don't care how many ingredients I carry in my kitchen, I'll give you the soup any way you want. Great. I have as many options on that seasoning as you want. But when I'm cutting back because the economy isn't allowing me to buy this excessive inventory of seasoning, guess what? Now it's like, I don't know if that's enough of a difference. I'll have this one.
But
I
mean, it's always... No, it's a great point. But,
yeah.
But the brands will use that and say, gee, you know, you can get 56 different types of Heinz soup or whatever it is.
Yeah.
One of the CEOs said that at the lodging conference. So it's true. But that doesn't mean it's good. And because
that's
it's
my
good,
point.
Because it's good for the brands, is it good for the owners? And is it good for the traveling public? So if you have to dissect that. The traveling public, I think, does understand it because my guests at each of our hotels, they actually have a reason they want to stay at that particular brand.
Wow.
But as an owner, do you want to compete with, in the case of Marriott, 30 brands just in the Marriott system, not to mention all your you know, the
other competitors in the market.
Well, they're not really excess. They're competitors.
Yeah.
They're just the competitors that you have. They're not in your brand.
Right.
But you're now competing with, call it interior versus exterior brands. You're competing with everybody, including your own companies.
Yeah, you're cannibalizing your own client base potential by basically offering such a variety of options that are not necessarily solidly differentiated.
And here's the thing also. The soft brands cost virtually as much as the full brands.
Yeah.
So whether it's Marriott, full-service Marriott, for instance, versus their Tribute or Edition or one of their soft brands, or full-service Hilton or any of Hilton's brands and their soft brands, which, you know, Curio and Canopy and Tapestry. Those soft brands cost almost identical amounts.
Amounts, wow.
You still charge a royalty fee, a marketing fee, and all the system fees that add up well over 10% of the revenues that you take in. So they have to perform,
right.
And at some point they won't when the music stops. And then the question will be, who will have more clout? The owners to make a move, or the franchise companies, because they're so consolidated that they will control the world.
It might be an issue of the market just flushing itself out, just as usually happens. Right?
Good. Never know.
No, yeah. You never know. You never know. Sustainability. Where are we at on that in the hotel sector? You've got a, you know, besides your educational component, your management, your ownership component, you're on the front lines with sustainability. What are you hearing from the guests?
Well, I mean, I think the guests are really educated today, and generally they want you to be doing something that is good for the earth.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't impact them in the present,
mm-hmm. right.
they want you to do something that is going to help the future. So I think the real line is to make sure you don't cross over that line that starts impacting them in the present.
Yeah.
I think that's really the key. And that's really what sustainability is, mm-hmm. is keeping things cool in the present, but making the future mm-hmm. a better place.
Yeah, I want to feel good about my contribution as long as it doesn't cost me.
It's more than the recycling, man.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, and of course, California, you know, since we're in California and we're on Checkout California, you know,
We're talking about straws.
We're talking about the straws. I said to Craig, look, you know, Craig, there are a lot of ways. There are a lot of ways that we're going to help with sustainability, climate change, anything else than plastic straws.
Yeah.
But I guess it was a step that Jerry Brown wanted to take. And I guess even though if he were running again, I might not vote for him. He's still my governor, I guess.
Well, you know, it was a boost to the bamboo straw business.
Yes, it was.
Right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact,
there may be a
bamboo lobby. Is there a bamboo lobby?
There might be.
It's called the BL.
Not that. Oh,
too funny. So we're not going to screw up the future. We're going to get rid of plastic straws. You're seeing more and more programs. I mean, about half of your hotels are branded. So what you're doing at a Hilton is different than a Marriott, that's different than a Hyatt, that's different from a Choice. So how do you manage all of these programs and initiatives?
That's a good question, and it's not just about sustainability, because each brand has their own idea of what should be done mm-hmm. in every facet of hotel management.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so when we run our independents, that's where RAR Hospitality creates its own culture and niche in the market by actually setting those standards. The brands, they don't set the standard. They require you to
here's
do it.
Your book.
They don't say, here's a goal. They're saying, if you fail, then you get points off, and mm-hmm. not only that, you can be thrown out of the system. So they actually insist on doing it their way. Whereas we're looking to reach a true compromise between our owners, our team members, and our guests.
And I would suspect that your independents are probably doing a better job, because you've been able to take the best from all the other programs and create a hybrid that you've gotten input from not only your guests, but from your team members there, and go, hey, that, you know, taking out this every day doesn't really work, but if we put it over here and it's, mm-hmm. you know, part of a maintenance issue at the end of the day, then it does work. You know, just using an abstract, you know, example. But I've got to think that your independent, your boutique hotels are probably surpassing any type of brand standards because of your intimate knowledge with all the brands that you've worked with.
I think that the question and your thoughts on what my answer is going to be is probably right, that we probably can do a better job. But the real reason we might be able to do a better job is that the brands really do what is best for them in addition.
Right.
I'm not saying they don't do what's best for guests, for team members, and for the hotel owner, but they definitely do what's best for them. So you're adding another entity, whereas we don't do it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
We do what's best for the team member, the owner, and the guest.
Yeah.
And we look at all three of those sides. The brand, I think, adds a dimension. What differentiates us? How do we promote our hotel brand as better than the rest? And they may take steps that are either counterintuitive for an owner because it costs too much, or not necessary for a guest because they may or may not have done enough research.
Right.
And whereas in our case, I think we truly we don't have an agenda when it comes to our image in the public, because we are only, our only image that we're concerned about is our guests, our team members, and our owners. We don't have an exterior universe.
Right. But sometimes you're dragged into that with certain guests that, you know, want to post anything they want on Yelp or, you know, one of the other social platforms.
It's part of the reality of life in any business these days. I mean, you don't really have much control over that. Yeah. You only have control about how you respond to it.
Exactly.
Right. And you have to respond, because you and I both know hoteliers that do the ostrich. They bury their head and they ignore it and hope it's going to go away.
A lot of business owners. I mean, in fact, it's really interesting to point out to people. I do this with spot clients all the time. You know, that where you you don't have an option of not responding, but what you do have option and control over is how you respond. And do you turn that negative into a positive? Do you develop a culture internally to whether it's you or somebody else who's answering those things, that they are done in a timely manner, that they you turn, almost manipulatively turn the situation?
Right.
Because the one thing that is interesting when it comes to that kind of review and reaction is that many people still don't understand that when you're reacting and responding on social media, you are not reacting and responding to the person who posted the comment. You are basically performing on a stage for everybody else who is reading.
Exactly. I mean, reputation management is what you're talking
about.
You could teach
social media. There we go.
Brad, why don't you teach a class in reputation management?
Find me a class. I'd love to teach it. Because
he was teaching.
Yeah, no, I do.
The school folded.
I mean, this is what I infuse into my hospitality design classes or institutional design classes is there's a lot of this stuff that, and I even did it today. They did this whole leadership program thing, and I said, but nowhere in your leadership program where you're trying to elevate people's understanding and skill sets do you even address the interaction with the environment and the experiential impact of the environment on the success of your business. Nowhere in those list of items do I see any of that in there. So you're going to bring out really operationally stellar people that have no clue how to maximize, you know, optimize revenue or profitability from their environment at a high real estate cost now. Right. So anyway, but to that point, yeah, and I've seen people do it successfully and people not. But I just want to speak to the brand thing for a minute. Yeah, it's interesting because there are conflicting interests. When in the brand, the argument sometimes is every piece of the chain, every part of the network is either a detriment or a positive reinforcement of the network. So if anybody doesn't follow the guidelines of the brand, then that network is somehow compromised. And it's really interesting because I've seen it on food and beverage franchises where they are constantly challenged. Where to draw the line? Where do I give you the binder?
Right.
And this is all that you have to do, and you can't veer away from it. And where do I allow you to have that little unhealthy treat to put on your counter if you want to, because in your market it's sought after. It's an interesting dance with brands, I think.
And I think it's based on the councils. So each brand has a council of owners, those owners can provide feedback to the brand and often do. And they need to react, the brands need to react as quickly as possible to that feedback if there's something amiss. Not to name the brand, but there was a brand who rolled out a redesign of their lobby, and the redesign was not only awful, it was stupid. So what we did,
So
I didn't do it, and I was getting beat up by the brand, you have to do this. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it because it's awful and it's stupid. And so we didn't do it, and 60 hotels did. 60 out of a big number, by the way. So it was a small sample. Uh-huh. Small is all relative. Yeah. 3 or 4% of the hotels did it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a complete flop. Every hotel I went to visit that had done this redesign, it was a disaster. And so all I can tell you is that is something that you need to take that feedback quickly, correct it. I will tell you that the brands virtually never will reimburse you for their stupidity.
I was going to say, who asked for the stupidity, right? Yeah, who paid for it?
Ouch. I mean, it just sounds so expensive.
And you would know in the contractor business.
That's just ringing through my head.
Yeah, oops.
Let's talk a little bit more about social media. Yeah. Again, Bob, you've got independents, you've got flagged, you've got boutiques. Now, how are you handling the social media? You've got a millennial sitting in a room or two or three. Are they taking the lead for RAR? How have you worked social media into the repertoire of your management company?
Is it strategic? Is it custom tailored to fit in with other integrated elements of your culture and offering? Is it a happenstance? I think those are sort of
That should give him about a half hour
Yeah. Well, go. One of the things is my daughter, who's 24 years old, told me a couple of years ago that the stupidest thing I could do was hire people who are over 25 to do my social media. So
that's interesting.
We have a young group, and that young group is very savvy, very aware of millennial needs, and smart enough to know that if they do a good job with the social media, they can bang home some success with the baby boomers as well, because they know how to reach them, because they understand them more, brought up with technology.
Right. So, now, what's the average age of these people in that department for you?
Under 25.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, do you move them to another department on their birthday? You know, give them a cake, sing a song, and go, here, we're promoting you. You're now going to be at the front desk.
No, seriously, you know, the thing is, you can't hire people based on age, of course.
Right.
But what you can do is put certain people who have a millennial mindset in certain positions. So the truth is, it's not about the average age. It's about their mindset. There are people in their 30s who have a millennial mindset and people in their 20s who actually don't. And there are actually people in their 50s and 60s who have a millennial mindset. So it's really about the mindset.
50s and 60s, though, isn't that more like a second and third childhood?
Yeah, it's like a Peter Pan syndrome, basically.
Yeah. Something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, when you have...
I'm speaking from experience,
Yeah, I know. Okay.
So to me, having a business partner who's a millennial, and, you know, Cameron is not only a millennial, he's a very smart guy, and working with him every day, and having two daughters who are... in the business, not directly. They're
advisory capacity.
Well, they're my vendors. I mean, they sell me stuff. I mean, they're on the vendor side. So I learn from these people, and they know how to handle things like this. So it's not so much the age, but the truth is, social media. You have to know the market you're going after. If it's Facebook, you need to understand who is on Facebook.
Right.
Same thing with Instagram.
Graham, totally
different. Frankly, with Pinterest and with Twitter. So, like, I'm involved.
And they're not the same.
They are not the same.
Each platform is its
own. And so, even though I do my own tweets and do my own Facebook posts and do all of them, actually, I do all my own posts, it's rare that I have somebody post for me unless I'm going to be on vacation. And you've probably seen my website. So
seen your videos, yeah.
I use millennials to make my stuff much better because I don't know how to make it much better. Whether it's a video where I can, you know, I can record my own videos and they look terrible. If I get a millennial to help me with them, they look good.
Yeah.
So I think you may find the same thing here. I know you got three young guys in the studio here, right?
Three of you.
Sweet talker.
Three of you.
So anyway. Does that,
I exclude myself automatically. I'm good.
I want to touch on this because you said something just now, and I think also is very critical when it comes to social media. First of all, it has to be strategic. You cannot apply standard marketing approach to social media. It is its own animal. Every platform has its own nuances. But one thing, which I think is also becoming more and more important, and we talk about it all the time, is that you can't have an 8x10 glossy all the time. It has to be authentic content development. And it has to be a voice. You have to develop the voice. Like when you said, I usually don't let others basically post for me, you didn't put it that way. You said, I usually post for myself. Right. But there's an authenticity, Bob, with that because it's your voice that you're comfortable sharing in that basically goes out. So when it's almost like the show or anything that we're involved in. When people are weighing in, they're coming in, they're listening, they're paying attention. Part of it is seeing it through the filter of Bob and the voice of Bob, and that's what I'm tuning into. Versus exactly just the content itself, which I think a lot of people also miss. They'll hire all these companies and they'll do this very glossy, you know, like 8x10 presentation. It's repetitive and all this stuff. But there's no soul to it that is reflective of that voice that represents that brand, that company, that person.
I think you're right. I think where it has to be authentic is important. But also, if you're going to spend money, on social media marketing, it must have a purpose and a return on investment. Mm-hmm. So if you are marketing to a certain niche, there has to be an ability to get intent to purchase. When you see something.
Traction and convertibility.
So a lot of people forget about intent.
Yep.
If somebody sees something and thinks it's cute, but they have no intent do anything, it fails.
Yeah.
It can be funny. You may even get a laugh out of your
I have 14 million followers, but I can't pay my rent. I mean, there's no convertibility, right?
But people forget the importance of that. So I think it's intent to purchase is really key.
Yeah.
So the content has to get to the right person and have intent.
I just want to add one more because it's a recent conversation I had yesterday night, and it's this word, SEO. Okay, SEO. Okay. Well, the person I was having a conversation with, they were all like diving into social media because, you know, if you're not in social media, you should be, and everybody's telling you you need to be and all this stuff, and you don't really have a clear understanding why you should be in it. And I listened to this conversation, and I said, okay, but you're already an established business. You already have a presence. You're three generations of this business, and you basically are looking to do what with SEO? What exactly are you needing to convert? You already have more business to deal with coming through your door by virtue of just being. If what you're trying to do is position yourself as an expert in the industry with the lineage and being involved for three generations in this industry and steamed in it, then you don't necessarily need to be doing SEO for conversion. What you need to be doing is opinions, panels, discussions, Rob Report articles, white papers, things of that nature. So if you go to the company that does social media and all they want to do is basically put you into SEO, that's not really going to get you the results. So again, strategy and clear understanding of what it is that you're trying to achieve through this, just like anything else.
I can't disagree. Search engine optimization, search engine marketing, these are all important. Pay-per-click, and you've got to get conversions. But I think I can't disagree with anything you said.
I mean, it works perfectly for the right reason, but it's not the answer for everything. Just like you buy a car that is a utility car because you have a function that you need the utility car. You don't buy a convertible and try to fill it with all the furniture to go stock something. I mean, it's interesting how we are mesmerized by the term social media to the point of stupidity. We don't think sometimes what it is that we want to get out of it.
Good point.
Well, I think the other thing is, you also get the companies that are set in their ways, and there's seven words that they use that kills the company and the people.
No way, no
way.
Nope.
Those
are not the words. Okay.
Nope. That's not it.
You guess.
That's the way we've always done it.
That's the way
we've always done it. Okay. And these are the ones. We've got a perfect example. Sears and Kmart filed bankruptcy this week. Okay. That's the way we always done it. Mm-hmm. So, it's constantly about changing. I think, you've got to use all of this. Bob, I want to thank you for being here today. It's been a great pleasure.
Yeah.
You can meet Bob Rausch at the 3rd Annual California Lodging Investment Conference. Bob is one of our sponsors. He's a panelist. He is a wealth of information and talent. Please give him a call and his team. And you want to give out a phone number for your office, or you want to give him just a website?
How do people find out about you?
Well, hotelguru.com is the easiest way to find me.
There we go.
If that's okay.
That's fine.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And since you floated it and teased the audience with it, how do people find out about Click?
You can go to cliconference.com, and we do have a special discount right now on registration, and that is all uppercase Click, CLIC, and that is on March 7th of next year. We've made some changes. We've improved the conference. I'm really looking forward to it. Bob's been a sponsor since day one, a founding sponsor. We've got some other groups joining us. It's going to be a full day. We're going from four panels to six, and we're still going to be done by 4:30. So it's going to be an informative, jam-packed day, followed by what I think is the best after party ever, but that's just my opinion.
But you need to find, you need to cozy up to Craig here for that one.
So
where is it going to be located? Because I know you moved the venue.
We're going to be right down the street. We're going to be at the South Coast Westin Hotel. So we're looking forward to our new home. We've got more room. We've sold out our first 2 years. I am anticipating we will do that again next year.
So get your tickets quick.
Yeah, we've got a number of tickets already sold, so that's coming along nicely. Our ad campaign with Hotel Management Magazine kicks off next month, so everything's going into high gear on that, and it wouldn't be possible without Rod Gantos, and Bob Roush, and all the other sponsors and exhibitors that we've got on tap for Click 3 next year.
So it's an awesome conference, and yes, I'm not joking. Get your tickets early because it will sell out again this year. It has done so 2 years in a row.
May I say, Rad and Craig, it has been a privilege and a pleasure to be here.
Hey, we owe you. Our show took off after you were here last year. That's when I felt comfortable, yep. And I think we've hit a groove, and I hold you responsible for that. So,
keep the groove going.
And I thank you for that, my friend. I thank you. I think our show hit that stride, that
sweet spot
that we thought we would hit, but it came during your first appearance on the show, and I appreciate you.
With that being said, anybody who's interested, let us know, and we will show you and share with you the link to that show, and then you can listen to that one and this one and
Absolutely.
Other shows as well. But no, I agree with Craig. I think it was an interesting thing. We refer to it all the time, Bob. It's like we just kind of – that show, we just turned a corner.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You could tell even today. I mean, it was just like –
Absolutely.
So thank you for being here.
Hey, today's show was brought to you by Rad Gantos and Associates and my friends and my bosses, Chris Hostert and Ed La Civita at Park West General Contractors. And Park West did renovate a Holiday Inn Express for RAR in Arizona, and it turned out beautifully. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor of Checkout California, you can reach Rad or myself on LinkedIn, Facebook, and the other social medias. Thank you all. We will be back in 2 weeks. And today's show was produced by Golden State Media Group. Thank you very much. And aloha.
More on that later on Golden State Media.
Thank you for being our guest today on Checkout California. We look forward to having you as a guest with us again in 2 weeks. Until then, you can always reach us through our Checkout California Facebook page or by emailing us at checkoutcalifornia@gmail.com. We love hearing from you, so do let us know what you think of the show and what areas of interest you'd like to see us cover in the future. Your feedback is very important to us as we continue to bring you the best hospitality our Golden State has to offer. Until next time, may all your days be filled with sunsets and palm trees. Now, go experience and check out California.